Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are reverberating through the airwaves in association with OldFootballShirts.com. Well, it's been a blank week in the Canada for the Albion, but we have plenty of players in action for their countries, with most trying to get themselves a ticket for this summer's footballing festivals. There was a Colombian debut for Stephen Alzate, and plaudits for Davey Popper, and a captain's armband for Shane Duffy, but no one could match the feats of young under-18 starlet Laurent Tallage, who scored eight times for the Swiss under-19 side, who narrowly edged past Gibraltar 16-1. Also this week, the Albion winning followed their 3-0 win at the Amex last Sunday, with a 5-0 win at London Bees in the Continental Cup. And today, we return to action with high-flying Leicester, our visitors at the Amex. We are hoping it ends up a little bit better than the Foxes' last visit to the South Coast. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wears, and we are delighted to welcome back the Argus' chief sports writer, Brian Owen. But first, we were saddened to receive the news this week of the passing of Albion power chair star Lewis Hammonds. Lewis was an absolute inspiration and a shining beacon of all the work that is done by Albion community. Al, you know Lewis.
Yeah, it's terribly sad news. I mean, it's the nature of players who are in the power chairs, you know, by their own nature, they're sort of like, you know, they have their disabilities, and some are sort of like, you know, more debilitating than others, some are stronger than others, but you know, it's no secret that Lewis had muscular dystrophy. It's an appalling sort of wasting disease, but what we would say is, I mean, over 170 goals, he was presented with an Albion shirt, he was, you know, and all this before, you know, before he hit 21. It's appallingly sad news. What we will do is that we a couple of years ago, Lewis's father Chris, who's a coach for the power chair team, came into the Reverb studios with Seb Finch, another power chair player, and we're just going to play a little snippet here from the show of Chris talking about Lewis and his involvement with the power chair team. Now we're here to talk about power chair football. I'll go with you first, Chris, before I turn to Seb. Tell us about your involvement within the Brighton and Hove Albion power chair team.
Obviously, I'm a parent of I'm Lewis Hammonds' dad. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just one of those things that you've got a disabled son. What's he do for? He's very competitive. He's got quite a bit of a aggro about him. He can be on the pitch.
Is that true, Seb?
Yeah, it's true. Very competitive.
Yeah. And it's what do I do with him? What does he do? We tried all sorts of things in terms of, we took him to art lessons, but I do remember walking to art lessons on a Saturday morning past the football pitch, and you'd look on the football pitch and think, why can't Lewis do this? So,
Whereabouts in Brighton? Oh, I assume we're talking Brighton. Whereabouts are we talking?
This was up in when we lived in Hayes.
Okay, right, yeah.
He was born in Brighton, but we moved when he was one up towards Hayes.
Okay.
So, yeah. So it's what do we do with him? And obviously, watching football was something we liked doing, so I had a little nose around Albion in the community and what they did, and we found that they did some power chair football down in Port Slade, I think it was. Seb,
yeah,
wasn't
it was Port Slade. Yeah. Saturday sessions.
Yeah, and that's where I first met you, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, we went down there and saw what it was about, and it started there, really.
So when you first took Lewis there, I mean, did he take to it like a duck to water, or...?
Yeah, I remember the first session when we came back, it's, Dad, I want to do this, we've got to do this, where do I get my tyre? And during the week, my neighbours owns a garage, so I popped round there, got a reject tyre, and spent quite tough to saw through the tyres. I never realised what was in a tyre until then.
Yeah.
But yeah, we cut it off, got some bungee cords, and sort of made a way of trying to somewhat safely strap it to the front of his chair, and we were off.
Okay, so as a squad, obviously you have to get on as good friends and what have you. So this is where I get to do the sort of like, okay, start your bitching of all your colleagues now, mate. So tell us about the characters that you've got. I mean, you've named them all, but tell us about the character that you've got to make your team work so well.
So obviously Matt is captain. He is the most vocal.
Who knew?
Yeah, he's been described before as quite a character. Lewis is,
his dad says competitive.
Yeah, you can see the red mist. He's the man I'm amazed that hasn't been booked, to be fair. He's never been booked.
Really? Even with the Red Mist?
Even with the Red Mist, he should have been.
So in the National League, he's never been booked.
He has his own version of Road Rage, and he's never been...
No.
He even got a ticket for it.
You can see it happening, and when it does, you can ice sub him, bring him off.
Okay, so... Right, Matt's the vocal one.
Yeah.
Lewis is the competitive one.
Yeah.
Sorry, who did you say? With the Road Rage. Go on. We'll talk about the technology and the chairs in a second, but we've got to talk. When we're talking about the squad here, we've got to talk about your lad, Chris Lewis, who, like I say, the competitive fella. Now, he reached a landmark this season, and what I saw was, I thought was fantastic, the club was able to mark it. So tell us about the goal scoring landmark he reached last season.
Yeah, so he hit his 100th goal. Mm-hmm. So we've been playing, we worked out 6 seasons, and we just. We're working back to see where we were with goals in the squad, and yeah, Lewis was approaching the 100, and he got that on the last weekend.
Double hat trick, right?
Yes,
a double hat trick. How selfish is that?
I know.
made sure he got it.
So yeah, no, that was quite something. So we made a big thing of it at the time, and big high fives going on. But we came back after that, and. We were presented. It was at the Derby game. Was it Derby?
I think so, yeah.
Game, pitch side. Went out and was presented with was completely unexpected on the shirt. We knew we were going pitch side.
Yeah.
But there's a little montage up on the screens at the Amex, which I didn't hear a word of because the crowd was too loud down pitch side. But it all looked pretty good. And then he was presented with the Hammonds 100 shirt, which was a really nice thing.
And did Dan shed a tear?
I was quite proud of him.
Yeah, that was Chris Hammonds you heard from there. We also heard from Seb Finch in that clip there. The whole show is actually up on our Audio Boom channel. So if you want to download that and have a listen to it. We're talking generally about power chair football and how it works and what the rules are and what have you. But that was Chris, coach for Albion power chair team, talking about Lewis and talking about what it all meant to him. We at the Albion Raw here extend our deepest condolences to the Hammonds family at this terrible time. And, I think every Albion fan who actually cares about every single member of any given Albion team, this is a desperately sad time. And our deepest regrets and condolences.
I mean, Brian, obviously Lewis was an absolute star in that team, but the work that Albion and the community do is tremendous, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's well recognised. Henry Winter was writing about it in his newspaper recently when we had the whip round and you could put your money in the bucket or do a swipe card or a bit more. So I think it is well acclaimed, and just listening there, it's, as you say, very sad, but amazing what he's done and the opportunities that they've had.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, Brian, let's get back to happier things. The international breaks. What do you do with yourself during the international break?
Well, in the old days, we used to have to store things up and see how we're going to do. But there's so much going on in the international break now with the Albion, with players who go on internationals, with players who don't go on internationals. There are games as well. Usually there's a lot of these like Leasings Trophy games. It wasn't this time, but also there was the women at the Amex, and there was the club did a lot of build up for that, and I thought that went obviously really well. I had an interview saved up, you might have seen, with Ezequiel Scalotto after the Norwich game, which went quite well, and we obviously, having followed extensively nice t-shirt good for radio,
that worked for those not wearing my Scalotto t-shirt,
he looks more like a racehorse to me than a greyhound.
Well,
but anyway, it's just Guillermo's who scurries around like a greyhound. But anyway, last time we followed Connolly for 2 weeks, and this time we followed Steven Alzate for 2 weeks, and with some help from a colleague in Colombia, getting some feedback from there, feedback from here, and they're busy, international breaks, which they didn't used to be.
Okay, well, let's talk about that now, because obviously you've been speaking to, I mean, you are multilingual. I don't know if many people know
more than two.
But I mean, you've been speaking to the Spanish press and to the Colombian press and stuff, and getting the lowdown on Steven Alzate, and it's one hell of a journey he's been on.
Yeah, it is, and I think what happened was I didn't actually watch the games because I waited for the team news, and now so obviously they were 1 a.m. and 2 a.m. but I woke up.
Beauty
sleep. Yes, charming. And I woke up after the one when he started to a message from a colleague, Oppo on ESPN Deportes, and he was saying about how disappointed he was, and he said, he played and it's good because Carlos Queiroz gets him on for 90 minutes, but he didn't do this and he didn't do that. And I thought it was quite actually wrote a piece about it. I thought that was quite interesting, you know, that what were they expecting from this? They were obviously thought, there's a young hotshot from the Premier League and he's wearing the number 10 shirt that Hamis used to wear.
Yeah, that was quite cruel, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. Was it because, I mean, Keroz obviously, that was more sort of public, you know, the public perception was, is he going to be the next Hamis Rodriguez? But it was quite interesting. The person I spoke to there on ESPN Deportes, he was saying that what he liked about Alzate was he moved the ball on, and he said he kept it simple, and Colombian midfielders don't keep it simple.
Yeah.
So and then on, I think it was Wednesday afternoon, I had TalkSport on at work, and Tim Vickery came on, and they were saying, you know, any performances that impressed you from all the South American countries in the international friendlies, and he straight away said Stephen Alzate, never seen him before, but kept it simple, moved the ball neatly, and so he was the first one he mentioned. So it was quite interesting, the cross-Atlantic divide in perception. You know, for one, he's the star from the Premier League wearing number 10, and for us, he's the kiddie who we saw playing against Bristol Rovers.
Well, to be honest, it's actually the same for us, isn't it? I mean, he is a fellow who just gets the ball down, keeps it simple, for the most part, keeps it simple. A couple of times he's been found sort of like slightly out of position, but yeah, he keeps it down, gets it moving, I haven't seen him do one of those big, booming sort of 60-yard cross-field passes yet.
Well, I mean, with 12 games of the season, I mean, he is really the surprise package. I mean, we all knew about Aaron Connolly.
Is he a surprise package?
He is to me.
Well, to get this far.
I mean, basically, he was on loan at Swindon last year and hardly caused a stir. So, I mean, it's like, you know...
Well, you don't cause a stir at Swindon, do you?
Well, there is that, yeah. You get lost in the roundabouts. But
I think progress would have been, he'd been on the bench now and he'd be coming on every now and then and he'd have played in the League Cup. No. It wouldn't be that Brighton were actually looking to him at Old Trafford to make things happen, and that he was starting for Colombia. So mm-hmm. I think, to the extent of how far he's come such a short time.
I mean, I still don't exactly know what player he actually, what his position actually is.
Well, the
he's
thing
played
is,
everywhere.
Well, the thing is, if you try and, we've said this before, if you try and actually work out a Graham Potter style, because there's two or three different styles sometimes that will be played within one game and everyone is expected to be. I think the only people that are kind of static in their position, if you see what I mean, is the spine, which is Ryan and goal. You've got the two defensive central defensive people, and even then they're part of a three, and you'll have Stevens and Proper, but even then there's some fluidity. I'll take your point, you know, Alzate will start in the middle of midfield and then sometimes he'll go as part of the wing back of a part of a five. Personally, I think he's better in the middle, but that's another matter entirely. So if you're trying to work out what his best position is, I think it's just the fact that he is going to be one of those players who, because the senior players have got their particular roles, he's going to be one who has to be versatile.
Well, I mean, it's obviously a player that Graham really, really likes and appreciates, and more importantly, trusts. Mm. You know, there are other players that could have come in that he let out go on loan, like Malumbi, for instance. He's doing okay for Millwall, I think, but I don't think he's tearing up too many trees. But he was meant to be the bright star. So the fact that Alzati's come in and he's come into this,
it's kind of jumped the queue, isn't he? Almost.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's incredible, and the fact we've got a lot of players that are out on loan at the moment, and that they all got to come back. I mean, next year. I mean, God knows what's going to happen.
I know. I think Baluta possibly the next one to go back out on loan. He obviously isn't. We don't know what happened today, but he isn't really making that much impact on the first team, which is fair enough. You wouldn't expect him to necessarily.
But he started
twice for Romania. Yeah. So he's going to have to play. He didn't do that. He played for the 23s at Orient in the Leasings Trophy. Didn't do all that much. But then to go and start twice for Romania, albeit in a. Sounds like quite a poor Romanian team. So, yeah, there are so many players out there. Ben White's name crops up quite often.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about Ben White then, because obviously, I mean, he's not on international duty as yet, but there's talk that Liverpool's slipping after him, and we may sell him to Liverpool for a lot of money without him playing a game for us.
Maybe. Not really sure. He's obviously doing particularly well at Leeds, and there was talk. I was quite surprised after Dunk got banned for a game. I started getting a few messages on Twitter. Are they going to recall Ben White? And I was thinking, well, not for one game. It's more if Adam Webster is out for 3 months or something, maybe. But quite interesting. The club obviously can't really comment on what they're thinking of doing with loan deals, but they did decide to put a story out with Graham Potter saying how well the loan is going. He was asked again about it on Thursday at his press conference, Graham Potter, and just said the same thing and sort of said he wanted to sign him for Swansea, so he knows how good he is. But at Brighton, just in a great position, aren't they? So how much would it cost to... We've seen how much Championship centre-backs can cost.
Well, yeah, we'll be paid £20 million for Webster. Well, so, I mean, how much is Ben White worth?
And let's see how it goes. It is, you know, November. Let's see how he does for the rest of the season. I think they're more than happy to judge him over a full season, probably including the big games which might decide promotion or promotion playoffs or things like that. It's a year-long loan, so let's let it run for a year. Same with McAllister down in Argentina.
And he has played for us. I mean, he's played for us in the league. He played for us in the League Cup against Southampton. Did okay. Didn't stand out as a bad player. You could tell he was a young sort of raw-ish recruit. But you know, he looked quite comfortable. But I think it's this season. It's the level of which he's got. You know, players are going out on loan. They say it's not a slight against Jason Lumbly. He's only at Millwall, but the mere fact that Ben White's out on loan at the top of the Championship. How big is the gap between the top of the Championship and the Premier League? Then, you know, does it mean that he can make that leap straight away in the way that, for instance, Lewis Dunk did quite well?
Yeah. But it's also the way Leeds play. He's playing for a team which Potter pointed out. They play, all those attributes are attributes which will fit Brighton, assuming Brighton are still playing with Graham Potter the same way at the start of next season.
Yeah.
So, but it is, I mean, same with Alzate. He said, come back to me when he's played 50 games and we'll have a proper conversation about him.
Mm.
So it is still pretty early days in careers of players. And if he's gone out for a year, there's obviously a reason for that. My view would be, if you can, let it run. And like I say, let's see how he does in promotion deciders and playoff finals and things like that.
And just a quick note on Malumbi as well. He is actually captaining a very, very good Ireland under-21 side at the moment.
Yeah, he went off at half-time the other night, didn't he? I don't know if that was injury. I didn't check on that, actually. And they ended up coming from 4-1 down, having gone behind to a Viktor Gyökeres goal against Sweden. They came from 1-0 down to win 4-1. Yeah, they are. There's a lot of excitement. There seems to be a lot of excitement about young Irish players, as I found out when I contacted people about Aaron Connolly in the previous international break, thinking, are we overdoing it a bit? Are we overhyping him a little bit? And then you hear what's going on across the Irish Sea and you think, no, we're quite calm. They are going way over the top. Not over the top, they're getting very excited.
OK, well, while we're talking about the lone players, with one that we don't know if we're ever going to see. We talked to Tony Bloom about it when we were interviewing him a couple of weeks ago. But Alexis McAllister, he's got himself into the Argentina first team.
Yeah.
He's one that is obviously rated very, very highly. What's the news on him that you've heard from the other side of the world, from your contacts?
Well, even his dad, who's seen the former Boca defender, who seems very keen for him to stay at Boca Juniors, and in a way you'd think, why not, when you see, you know, it's the club that he's grown up adoring and the support and everything.
And the Bombonera is something quite mad, isn't it?
But even he has said, I think this is going to continue until June, and then Brighton will he'll stay at Boca till then, and then Brighton will make their decision, and presumably he goes off to England. So I've got no idea where they are with the work permit. Obviously the fact he's got into the Argentinian squad but
that
hasn't
helps.
Played you think so? It's a step towards helping anyway. It hasn't helped yet getting into the squad for friendlies, but if he can stay in there for when the World Cup qualifiers start and can actually get on, he obviously didn't get on this time because they had a bloke from Barcelona who got back into the squad after.
He's rubbish though, isn't he?
Yeah. I was about to say, think of the person he's trying to dislodge. It's a little bit unfair on him, isn't it?
But yeah, but if the player is trying to dislodge him, you know, there are comparisons there. Wow, what a player we've got in.
Yeah, I don't know how true that is. It's quite a nice thing for us to make a comparison. Oh, Messi's back in, so old McAllister. But remember, he was called back in to that squad, McAllister, at very short notice when Roberto Pereira was injured. So whether he stays there for the next one, I don't know. But and I also read a long, long piece on one of the main sports papers on Argentina, and it really sort of went nowhere apart from ended up saying, wait and see, he's on loan from Brighton, let's see what happens at the end of the loan. So again, you know, there's time to judge these things. No idea where Tony might, I don't know if he told you where the work permit thing was, but I don't suspect he did.
It was kind of in train. I mean, we've got the same issue with Percy Tower, you know, playing in Belgium, but you know, I think he's going to be further back because South Africa are not going to break into the top 50 as easily as Argentina are going to be in there permanently,
the
are they?
The only thing I've seen on the reading through the Premier League handbook is that there can be special cases for players of particular significance. So if he was like the emblem, I don't know, this is me guesswork in a way, but if he was like the emblem of a country like South Africa and they thought he had special significance, maybe. But
well, their fans seem to scream about him. Yeah. I mean, every time that something comes out on social media from the club, then immediately just people saying Percy Tau. I mean, there seems to be a bit of a fervour from him from South Africa, isn't there?
Yeah, and by the way, McAllister, I spoke to Scalotto about him and he said he would suit the way Brighton play as well. This would be the sort of club to come to, and he seemed quite positive about him coming over here. So all being well, Percy Tau, don't know so much about Percy to have that exciting game at the Bernabeu, didn't he, in the Champions League. But we'll see. There's a lot of options there, but it's the same. He's on loan for a year, so again, why not let it run?
Can you confirm something? Let's talk about Spanish linguistics here. And I don't know if it's been something that that they've been asked to do, but when his name is announced, certainly at the stadium, and I don't know if it's Richard Reynolds just being sort of showy-offy, they announce him as Esquiloto.
Is that a Spanish thing? Yes, because the Spanish have this thing where they struggle to pronounce S and then a consonant. Hence, it's España, Especial, Escocia. So when you ask Esquiloto his name, he will say Esquiloto, and he probably won't even hear that he's made that little E sound before. So if you hear somebody speaks really good English and has got the pronunciation, they will have dropped that. But if you hear maybe somebody from Spain who doesn't speak such good English, they might still put that in, you know, Especial or...
You're right. Gus used to do that, I noticed. So, you know, you talk about a particular player who's Especial.
Yeah. So if you look at España is probably the best one I can.
Well, to be fair,
with
España, they do have they've planted an E at the front.
That's what
I
mean. Yeah, so you won't see words in the Spanish language that start S consonant. Right. So when there is one, they would struggle with it.
All right.
Okay. Before we move on, we've just got to talk about the main star of this week's international break, which is a player which is probably not on anyone's radar really, but he starred for the Switzerland under-19 side, scoring 8 goals. Obviously, that means he's got to be promoted to the first team immediately.
What
do you know about him?
Well, they played against Gibraltar. I mean,
yeah, narrow win that.
They needed to win by 15, didn't they? And they won by 15.
Yeah, 16-1.
Five goals in the last 10 minutes or something. So, but he scored people might have seen him score for the under 23s against Tottenham in a really impressive Friday night 4-1 win recently.
That was the week straight after the League Cup game.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah. So they put a younger side down. I personally know the name. I don't know an awful lot about him myself. But the under-18s are having a fantastic season. And we don't have the same contact as we used to, when we used to just phone up the manager every week, when it's Steve Brown or Martin Hinchelwood. But obviously Mikey Beard, one of their coaches,
right, yeah,
who went off to England. And there is like the showcase FA Youth Cup on Friday night coming up for... it's that November 6th. There's two Friday night dates been fixed up. So there's the women before we all go to Anfield, or some of us, and then the following Friday is the FA Youth Cup at Crawley. So there's a great showcase for him and his fellow high flyers in the under-18s.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, with the current pathway, who knows at the moment? So, you know, if he's good enough, he'll be given an opportunity. But, you know, 8 goals, it's impressive.
Yeah,
I know it's Gibraltar, but...
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know that Gibraltar could actually, you know, field an under-18 side, so...
Well, they lost by that score, and I think pretty much it was a 13-0 or 14-0 and 16-1. So, you know, they did score against Switzerland.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's great that Gibraltar are part of the part of UEFA now. I think basically to wind up Spain, but it's great that they're there. But you know, there's such a massive sort of golfing class. And actually, what is the qualification? Because obviously it's a British dependence, or it's a British territory. So what is the qualification to play for Gibraltar?
I don't know.
But, I mean, it's not.
You're right. Yeah. Could anybody British play for?
Okay, let's move along then. You are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. As usual, we're brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com, and I have got a wonderful shirt of the week, which I'm just going to pass over to Brian Owen to have a look at. I love it.
Always struggle with these.
We do, yeah. Okay, give that a description.
It is... it's black with a little bit of is it black or dark?
It's black. Dark.
It's usually your printer.
And there's a skyline of a city at the bottom.
Do you recognise the city?
I'm going to turn it to me, or
could it be like a Prague or something like that?
It's
Prague-esque.
It is Prague-esque.
It looks like the intro to Frasier. That's not a clue, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
can you
look
at the badge, or has it been photoshopped?
You're pretty much on the money, Brian, actually.
Okay, yeah. It's there's a dragon on the, or a lizard or something on the badge.
A
cartoon, yeah. There's a teddy bear on the sleeves. Yes, it does look kind of sort of Central European, that skyline.
Sponsor is Maya Lukash.
Yeah, well, Brian, you're right.
Okay,
you are right. It is Prague.
Yeah, but which team? There's several.
Well, there you go. This is.
It's not a Dukla Prague away kit.
It's not what you want for
this
Christmas.
This is your shirt of the week, and it is Phil's most recent acquisition. This is the 2019-2020 away shirt of Prague Raptors FC.
Oh yes,
from Prague in the Czech Republic.
Yeah.
The Prague Raptors FC is a multicultural community amateur football club with men's, women's, youth and children's teams. The club posts a clear mission statement on its website. Prague Raptors are a progressive, modern football club with a passion to help make the world a better place whilst playing some decent football. They're a non-profit club, investing in their teams and local causes, and they're also part of the FAIR Network, which is a European umbrella organisation committed to combat inequality in football and using the games as a means for social change. The aim is to get the men's team as high up in the Czech league as possible while maintaining the values previously mentioned. They play in the ninth tier at the moment at the Zdenko Hřiště Stadium.
You made that up.
In the western suburbs of the city. Their record attendance so far is...
About 150.
250.
All right, close enough.
Their current first team manager...
We get more than that for Renf games.
Yeah. Their current first team manager is a Brit and a Stoke City enthusiast called Jonathan Davis. And he divides his time between managing the Raptors first team and as a youth team coach at Slavia Prague. The team name was chosen by Lucas Moss, the son of Daz Moss, the owner of the club, because it's his favourite dinosaur is the raptor. And Lucas' favourite colour is blue. My God, there you go. So thanks for that, Phil.
It's another one of those, if you took away the skyline, it could be like a BBL... You know, T20 shirt.
And yes, it's blue with
the black and the
we're talking about sort of like just a basic cyan for those that know they're printing here. But yeah, the skyline. I'll say the first thing I saw was a kind of a like heart monitor blip thing, and realizing it was a skyline. But as these things go, it's such a lovely shirt. Yeah. I remember going to Prague a few years ago with Phil, but sadly he absolutely adored the city. Phil is not, you know, he's a lovely fellow. We love him to bits, and we do appreciate his sponsorship of the show. But the issue we have is that he's not necessarily the world's most eloquent person of praising things.
Right.
Sadly, I can't say on air what it was he said about Prague.
There's nothing about this town that upsets me.
But you know. Lapse into Anglo-Saxon vernacular, and that's really what he said. But actually, I quite like that shirt. I know that we sort of don't necessarily have the same shirt taste here, but you're right. There is a touch of T20, but it is actually there's a nice casual sort of thing about that shirt.
It's, and I like the Frasier-ness of the shirt as well.
Well, there is that. Was it tossed salad and scrambled eggs?
That's exactly okay. It. Okay. Well, today we are obviously playing Leicester City, and I'm now joined by Jamie Thorpe from the Leicester podcast First for LCFC. Jamie, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, guys. Afternoon or morning, whatever time it might be.
I'm not sure what time it is. It's about 12:30, Jamie. So,
good afternoon.
So thanks for joining us. It's been an impressive start to the season. So, are you surprised by the impact that Brendan's had so far? Were you?
Definitely. I think we thought he'd have a positive impact based upon the changes that he made last season and how quickly he turned it into, you know, a sort of struggling, fairly average team into a team that could really compete. But even so, surprised that we're at this stage of the season sat in second. Yeah. I mean, there's a good chunk of the season gone. We've played some big teams and put in some good performances, and whether it lasts or not is something that definitely remains to be seen. But I think we deserve to be there at the moment. We're playing some lovely football, and we've definitely got a bit more of an identity about us as well. So it's been a good start.
Yeah, I mean, it's largely the same personnel that Claude Puel had. It's just been a little bit of tinkering and maybe the addition of Tielemans.
Exactly, but he's got players playing to their strengths again. I think one of the things that Claude Puel did, he sort of ostracised Jamie Vardy. He tried to replace him early, tried to almost phase him out, it seemed, and that was a huge mistake. Vardy, as we've seen, is only getting better, it seems. So we're sort of building a team around him. He's not particularly involved during the game. He only averages about 20 touches, but everyone he has is crucial.
It's in crucial areas of the pitch, isn't it?
Exactly. He's almost like playing like a bit of a target man in a lot of ways, and that he links a lot of the play together. Then, of course, you've got Maddison and Tielemans, which you mentioned, who are the two that make us tick, and they are given a very, very central and very pivotal role in that team. So it's about using the individuals much, much better.
I mean, you've got Ndidi to add to that as well, who's crucial. But, I mean, is it true that if you shut down the midfield, you shut down the side?
It definitely stops us ticking. Indeed, you're right. He sort of sits in front of the back four and mops it up, and he uses the ball well, but he's not the creator. That is Maddison and Tielemans. And the way that we play, the wide men play very, very wide. They hang on the touchline. And so if you cut the midfield, the central two off, you cut the supply to them. And that is where we've struggled against teams, the guys that have sort of acknowledged that. Burnley in particular did it really well. They sat with, well, all 10 men behind the ball, so you would expect to be limiting chances, but they shut Madison and Tielemans down, and we sort of struggled for a little while. So it'll be interesting to see how Brighton line up against us.
Yeah. Well, your last visit to the South Coast went quite well.
Yeah, so, I mean, I doubt it'll be something quite as good as that. I mean, obviously, I hope it will, but no, that was a shock. I mean, I said before the game on our podcast, I predicted, I was like, look, we've got it in us to sort of demolish a side, but never in my wildest dreams did I think that was going to
happen. Yeah, I mean, it was a bit of an aberration, I think, and it's like, and Southampton basically just gave up, so it was,
they did, and we just kept the foot on the gas, which was kind of nice to see, but I can imagine you guys probably enjoyed watching it almost as much as we did, but it was, quite a result.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, obviously, I mean, this is your tally of 26 points after 12 games. It's your most during at this stage of a top flight season, and it's actually one more point than you had during the title winning season. So, I mean, it's looking good for you so far. But is it? Can you maintain it, or have you been like punching above your weight?
I think we have slightly in that. Well, if you want to be one of the people that believes most of the stats in terms of expected goals, we're outperforming that. But I think we're just being very, very clinical. My worry will be that if Jamie Vardy has a drop in form or an injury or something like that is where we'll struggle, because it tends to be that if we get a chance, we're taking it at the moment. We're being very patient, but not creating an awful lot of chances of that Southampton game aside. Mm. So it'll be interesting to see. I think a lot of it rests on his form. Or if one of the wingers perhaps can sort of step up in if he does have an off game. That's where it will depend. I think as a defensive unit, we're looking very good.
Yeah, you've got the best defensive record in the league, actually.
Which has been a real improvement on last year, where we did seem to concede first every single game and you were sort of chasing a match. So that's been one of the biggest changes. So in terms of being broken down, we're looking pretty good. The emphasis will be at the other end of the pitch if we can maintain it, I think.
Well, fortunately, your defence doesn't include a Lewis dunk, thankfully for us, which was very much rumoured. But the replacement for Harry Maguire has done very, very well, hasn't he?
Yeah, Swanson's come in, signed him the year before. I think this is a long-term planning. But to be honest, in his sort of cameo appearances in the season Maguire was with us, he wasn't particularly convincing. But he's come in, he's just been like a new man, really. He's a cult hero down there. I mean, I'm not sure if you've heard the song about him, but I won't repeat it on your podcast.
It's a family show.
Yeah, but he's been brilliant. Stepped into those shoes really, really well, which is really important. We're a bit thin in depth at centre-back. If one of Evans or Sanchez does get injured, then we're looking at Wes Morgan, who's, you know, fantastic servant, but it's probably only got a year or so left in him. So it's an area that we need to address, really. But yeah, he's been brilliant so far.
You can't have Dunkey, sorry. He's ours. He's one of our own. But I mean, actually, he's missing today as well. So it's obviously with a suspension. Okay, now, foreign owners in football are often frowned upon, but the Shrabhada Prabha family, have I said that right? I always get it wrong.
Yeah, that was a tricky one to do, I think. Yeah.
But I mean, their family has had a massive impact, not just on the club, but on Leicester as a whole, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was one of the things that they bought into really well, was that the football club is a huge part of the community, and means a lot to the people of Leicester as well as just the fans. So they do a lot of community outreach work. The LCFC and the community scheme that they launch is going from strength to strength. And then you read about the donations to local hospitals and stuff like that. And yeah, I think that was a massive part of what endeared people to them so much.
Apart from the fact they were buying you beer as well and giving you scarves.
I mean, that beers, donuts, etc., those do go down rather well as well.
Yeah, the clackers aren't so good though, right?
I mean, yeah, they are polarising in terms of Leicester fans. I kind of like them, but it's a bit of an investment, that much is for sure.
But obviously with the disaster that happened last year, I mean, has that had how much of an impact did that actually have on the city as a whole and going forward? I mean, has it like galvanised the team? Because it wasn't doing so well at the time.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, obviously, it was a massive shock at the time, and it was kind of nice in a way to see the city and to be honest, the wider footballing community came together with the, you probably saw the images of the tributes outside the stadium, and that was kind of nice to see in a way, because it showed the impact that Vichai had on the wider footballing community. You know, we did something that most teams would have thought impossible. I mean, we certainly did. So I think it gave people that chance to think, hold on, yeah, this can actually be done. But yeah, since then, his son's taken over and seems to be intent on fulfilling that sort of legacy. He seems pretty astute businessman. I mean, you saw again, 85 million for Maguire is an achievement in itself.
Particularly as his replacement's probably better than him.
Well, Johnny Evans was our best defender last year. But yeah, he's carried it on, and you know, we're in safe hands with that family for sure.
Okay. I mean, it's something that we can certainly resonate with. I mean, obviously, our owner Tony Bloom is a wonderful benefactor to the club and to the city and to the county as a whole. So I mean, we can see what the Shreba Halaprabas are doing to Leicester there as well, and we can totally understand all that, because it's like I said, I mean, the foreign ownership in football is not necessarily a good thing. So it's nice when someone does come in and actually get the city and actually reinvigorate the city. Like I said, the donations to hospitals and things like that, I mean, it's so important, and particularly at this particular moment in time.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You see the example of how it's done wrong in so many clubs. I mean, you look at Cardiff, for example, when their owner took over and changed the colour of the shirts. I mean, that's just a guy that just does not understand what a football club is about and what it means to the fans. And I think, like you said, with Brighton's and Leicester's owners, they certainly get it. And realise that it's not just a business. Obviously, they're in it to make money, probably in the long term, but they understand that the impact it has on the people goes far beyond that. So, yeah, he's they're absolute, you know, heroes to Leicester fans, and certainly viewed as one of our own down there.
Absolutely. Okay, well, we don't wish you luck today, obviously, but good luck for the rest of the season. I mean, Leicester to clubs like Brighton are aspirational, really, because, I mean, the miracle of you winning the league is like, it just shows that it can be done. Whether it will happen again, I don't know, but obviously you are sitting in second at the moment, so well done for that, and let's hopefully your goal difference will take a battering today. But good luck for the rest of the season, and thanks for joining us, Jamie Thorpe.
No, thanks for having me on, guys.
No worries. Many thanks. That was Jamie Thorpe from the first Leicester City FC pod. Like I said, the Shreba Halaprabas there, they are doing a wonderful job there at Leicester.
Yeah, that was I think that was after Brighton play Wolves, wasn't it, last season, when that happened in that evening that evening game, like that the tragedy up there, and it was quite soon afterwards that the Leicester came down here and they got that 1-1 draw, and it was, you know, again shown as a scene of at the end, the scene of a sign of the sort of togetherness and spirit, etc. So
Now, the thing about the last year's game is that I would have convinced myself that we won 1-0, but obviously we're not. But can anyone remember, because we were talking about this on the train on the way in, can we remember the penalty that we gave away in the last minute?
Wasn't it Kyle?
Was it Kyle? Okay.
What I remember is Vardy coming off the bench, if I remember this right. Yeah, I haven't looked it up. And just totally revitalising Leicester, revitalising their fans, putting the nerves into Brighton.
Yeah,
and he had that. It was almost like when Shane Warne comes onto bowl. It was like it had that. He changed the game even before he'd actually done anything, or changed the feel of the game.
Sure, yeah, it has that certain element of brick outhousery.
Well, there's that, but also, I mean, just remember the bright young thing who's now obviously made a step up to England as James Maddison. You know, getting his red card and actually apologising for it afterwards. I mean, he did do that. I mean, I think he just clipped his first yellow card. He clipped someone as we were breaking away. Yeah, clear yellow. So one of those take one for the teams, which are really, really irritating. Except for when they happen on your for your team. But then the next one was a dive and.
Yeah.
You're kind of half expecting a penalty, but the referee spotted it straight away. And you know, it's actually probably one of the funnier red cards when you see an opposition player get it. It's not a second foul or anything like that. But when you see it for diving, there's almost a touch of, you know, ha 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 karma. And it's probably the best red card that your opposition player can have. Because obviously, sometimes it'll be a red card. For a lunging tackle, you think, you know, get off the pitch, you ... But in this one, it's a dive, ha ha. And like I say, he apologised afterwards. He said he was expecting a touch, you know, from behind. You think, well, what, how is that going to make you go down? You go down because you've been clattered. You know, it's kind of the mindset of a footballer. It's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's epidemic. I mean, it happens at every club. It happens here. We were talking about Steven Alzatti earlier. He got booked twice in his first two games for diving.
Well, one he didn't get booked for, yeah. But he did have it within his. And thankfully, I don't recall seeing it since. Going down easily.
No, I asked Potter about that, and he obviously didn't really say much about it in one of his press conferences. But you wonder if he will have probably noticed that it had been noticed, sort of thing. And yeah, maybe it's been spoken about. I don't know. I mean, Leicester as well. It must be about almost exactly 6 years. 6 years ago, one of my favourite games at the Amex, a 3-1 here under Oscar Garcia.
After
Brighton had lost at home to bottom of the table Barnsley in midweek. And I think Leicester went about 25 unbeaten after that until they played Brighton.
I vaguely remember the win, but I don't remember the sort of Leicester sort of tearing up. Was that the year that they? Hang on, yes, I do. It's the year that they won the division.
Yeah,
and then we went up there and won 4-1. Yeah. When they were slightly celebratory mood.
Yeah, and Leo was particularly decent in the away game up there. The home game was all about David Lopez. Two goals from Ashley Barnes and one from Craig Conway, which I particularly remember.
Yeah. Was that the screamer? No, it was the running one, wasn't it?
It was just a wonderful ball from Lopez, which Conway got on the end of. And like,
these games and goals we remember from 6 years previous.
It's amazing.
I remember it vividly, as if I saw it yesterday. In fact, I saw it yesterday. So, Brian, here we are, 12 games in. What have you made of it so far? Pluses, minuses?
I think you still look back for a long time. Brighton was being haunted by those points, which we spoke about. Last time I came in with you was before the Tottenham game. Mm. The points which had got away, and now it's maybe been a little bit redressed. Sort of Everton, where they didn't serve to win and did win. I thought that was a big result. There's obviously so much talk about the VAR decision, but the way they then went and got the win, rather than thinking, "Yeah, set solid to draw," it's. I think if you go away to Man United and Chelsea and they're sort of wake up calls, you can sort of get a bit excited and think they're Brighton are going up there in good spirits and in a good shape and they could get a great result, and you sort of forget these. When Brighton went to Chelsea, they hadn't won at home, but they still were a good side. United are down in 10th, but you know, they've still got good players. But I'm just keen to see what happens in the next few weeks, because I think that's going to be such a test, not just the games, but the accumulation of games.
Well, obviously the Liverpool game next week, that's going to be tough. Obviously they're top of the table and at a canter at the moment. But I mean, it's how we cope. We're going to have to start picking up points at these places. I mean, the Chelsea performance, everyone was saying that was the worst performance of the season and it was terrible. I don't remember it being that bad. I thought we stayed in the game. We didn't play brilliantly, but we stayed in the game. And then if Dan Burn had actually headed in rather than down and over and against the bar, then it would have been 1-1 and the pressure would have been on.
But then we're back to the Liam Brady comment, if my granny had, you know. Yeah.
But I mean, the performance of Man United, that was terrible.
It was. But then, I keep going back to what we've said in press conferences, but I think it's quite sort of pertinent. I said to Potter, I'm sure you and the players are not taking this lightly, but do you think there's a fact that fans and maybe us in the media a little bit sort of complacent, expecting too much of you going to Man United, not underrating Man United, if you like, because they were still sort of 10th, they've still got those individual players, and you know, normally Brighton going away to a team who were 10th in the league and have just drawn with Liverpool and have beaten Chelsea 4-0, you wouldn't expect so much, and we're getting a little bit too much expectation of what Brighton could go, you know, to Old Trafford and get their first ever win. And it's just a little reminder that these teams have some quality players. If they get a little deflection and a scramble goal along the way, that's the sort of thing you really don't need to happen as well. So,
well, I can't help feeling that also the way that Potter sets up with, you know, doing the risk thing, you know, and again, Tony talked about it when we interviewed him, you know, he feels that some managers have been too risk averse, and you know, he'll take the risk and the reward. But because of that, because there's a sort of relatively open, expansive way of playing, I think it plays into the big club's hands. You know, if you pack the defence, which we hated when Houghton did it, but you know, the games were so much tighter against the top six for the most part. We didn't get the ball that much, and all we were doing was just lumping up to Glenn Murray. But the point is that the other teams were getting frustrated, and we eked out the odd bits and pieces here and there. Whereas the nature of Potter's style is that it must be high quality, and for the game against Man U, the passing has to be crisp. It's and again, we talked about it. It's not the person who's just passing it; it's the person who's receiving it. And I just thought there was just the one or two, no, actually probably four or five performances where the players just weren't snap, snap, snap on their day. So where you got Man U, who haven't been playing brilliantly, but their passing was made to look good because, you know, we're giving the ball away so much. You've got to have that level of quality for Potter's style to work. And I always go back to the notion of Reinus Michels, the Dutch national coach of 1974, total and their football. Total football. But they said total football will only work if you have five or six world-class players. You can't just do it with anyone. And I think there's an element of that with Potter. His stuff will only work if you have players of a given quality. And one or two times, we'll have players who can play really, really well, but they can't do it week in, week out. Whereas when you see Man U, Man City, Liverpool, that's the difference, is that once in a while we can play them and beat them. But with Liverpool and Man City, they do it week in, week out.
And Chelsea and United were very sharp, pressing. They were very sort of up for it, mm-hmm. up for the game. You'd think the same will happen at Anfield next Saturday, as it actually happened on the windswept pitches at the Lancing training ground yesterday when Liverpool's under-23s came down and wouldn't let Brighton's under-23s get out of their own sort of third or quarter of the field for quite a lot of the first half. That was late on. They put on Radulovic, the big striker. Yeah. He made a difference. I think he scored three goals in the last 10 minutes or so. But that, you know, that's the sort of and I suppose people will know how Brighton are playing, want to play as well.
But the under-23 side last year, though, that they did so well last year. But obviously, a lot of that side is now currently out on loan. So this is a new batch. So it's
they're in lines of the point. It's the conveyor belt, it's the trolley that's actually coming through.
Yeah. There's almost an under-23 team out on loan if you brought them all back together again.
Absolutely.
But
I was going to say, actually, for the fact it's an under-23 team, actually a lot of them are only sort of 18, 19 years old.
Well, under-23.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, but I mean, as way of comparison, obviously two different managers, so you can't compare and contrast too much, but at this stage of the season we're only one place and 1 point better off, so
yeah, we all know what happened in the second half of the season. That was a horrible crash and burn that we had, and we're back to you talking about when you were last on
it was on the Saturday lunchtime, and people were quite, everybody was sort of quite confident going off to watch Brighton play Bournemouth, and it's not been great, but get a win against Bournemouth. I think Cardiff might be coming up quite soon in the midweek, and we saw how it went. I mean, you were saying there about Houghton and, you know, how it was two banks of four and packed tightly and making it hard to get through. That was lauded for a long time. I mean, I think people didn't say, oh, this is boring from Brighton. It was like, this is well organised from Brighton. This is good defensive strategy by Chris Houghton. So for a long time, and it worked for a long time. And it wasn't, I don't think people for quite a while were crying out, we don't want this. It was sort of quite late on, but you know, when
it's because the results were going the way they did, and it's the likes of that card, that triumvirate of Southampton, Cardiff, and Bournemouth. He realised actually, you know, these are teams that we can get something against, and it's almost to say they weren't trying. It was just there was no so little ambition.
Yeah,
and Bournemouth, I think four of Bournemouth's goals were basically carbon copies. Give the ball away, and then bang, four or five of them are break, and they're queuing up to knock it in.
The red card didn't help, big was it? But
no.
But okay, so I mean, the man that we're out without Lewis Dunk for today's game, so we're going to have a different man wearing the armband. That man is most likely to be Dale Stevens, who made his 200th appearance for the Albion at Man United.
Have you got some stats?
I have got some stats.
Okay, go on. There's not many stats.
He missed a lot, didn't he, Stevens? He missed a lot of games. When I don't think he played for Sammy Hippier at all, which is a bit unfortunate for Sammy.
And also he had a bit of a wobble when there was that time when Burnley was sniffing around him. And I think it was the season we went up in the end. You know, for that first part of the season, until about sort of September, October, he came on and scored against Wigan as a substitute. And you think, Dale Stevens as a substitute, but, you know.
Go on, what are the stats?
Well, I haven't got too many stats to be honest.
There's not that many.
He made his debut on the 2nd of February 2014. Oh, guess the team?
No,
the team. Oh, gosh, that was 14.
So we would have been talking O'Grady.
It's a really good team.
Teixeira.
No.
So hang on, who would have been in goal? It would have been Kuszczak.
Yep.
Okay. Dunk would have played.
Bruno.
No Dunk. No.
Okay. Upson.
Greer, yes.
Upson,
yes.
Ward,
yes.
Calderon.
You said Bruno, didn't you?
Yeah.
Bruno, yeah.
Okay, well, Calderon played as well. Okay, midfield would have been, well, Stevens, obviously.
Yeah.
Kyle wasn't here then, was he?
No. Was Bridcut around?
No.
Was CMS up front?
Andrews.
Keith Andrews, yeah.
Keith Andrews, blimey.
And I'll tell you, I think possibly coming off the bench was the other signing on. That was a Sunday game. And the other signing made on the Friday in the morning, David Rodriguez.
Yes, it was. He didn't start, though. He came on in the 64th minute.
Yeah, two signings on that day.
Spanish Rod.
Spanish Rod, yeah. So no, the... No, he was on the bench. Right. He came on. He did come on in the 40th minute, though.
Of course, yeah. Was it Ogier up front?
It was, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, so it was Kuchak, Bruno, Greer, Ward, Upson, Andrews, Stevens, or Landy is the one you missed.
Yeah, yeah.
Jake Forster-Castegui. David Lopez and Leo Ogier. Where Dunk was on the bench, as it was called, Solly March, and as you meant, Spanish Rod.
Where was JFC these days? Is he still at Charlton?
Yeah. He's just come back from injury.
But yeah, but his first goal came in the 3-3 draw at Blackburn. Can you remember who got the other goals?
No. I remember, wasn't that one the one when Bruno hauled somebody a horrible yellow card and ended up getting banned for three games? But the other goals, Gordon Greer.
Yes.
And David Rodriguez. It was the night that he opened the can.
That was the one I didn't think you were going to get.
Well, it was the night that he came out and he said, "I opened the can," and I didn't quite know what he meant, and so I realised it was like broke his
broke his duck.
Dale's is a funny player. He's Marmite would be.
Cannot get my head around why people have such a thing about this whole thing about him passing sideways and backwards. He is one, and we're talking about Alzati again here. You know, similar to Alzati, he's someone who keeps the ball moving. Sometimes he can be a bit sluggish, but the whole sideways and backwards bit. This is a fella who just won't, if he can help it, give the ball away. Sometimes his passing is sloppy, yeah, but he's one who actually keeps the ball ticking over. He is pivotal to the whole team. He's also, there's been games where he's actually bossed him and Proper, or him and Kyle, or him and Sidwell. I mean, the partnerships he's had have all been pretty successful. There's no way you
and
can
he's
say
outlasted
that.
All of them.
And he's outlasted all of them. And this is a fella who was, you know, he all right, he wanted to go to Burnley for 5 minutes, then realised actually you're not going anywhere, and he's stuck with us, and it's brilliant. I absolutely love this player. He can be maddening, but you know full well that, you know, that the 100% he's going to give will be for the Stripes, not necessarily ours, but depends who we're playing. I cannot get my head around the sort of like the overt criticism of him.
But Brian, I mean, it's often the case with the players that do all the dirty work who aren't necessarily being seen to be playing the raking passes. Well, if you look at the ball he played for Antti Knockaert's stunning goal at Palace last year, he's capable of those pinging passes. Yeah. But a lot of the really good work he does is unseen.
Yeah, sure. And more recently, the pass which actually got that move for the own goal against Everton, which actually got it going forward, it was his pass. Yeah, perhaps central midfielders you don't notice so much during the game. You notice the strikers and the centre backs, but when I asked Graham Potter about it, talking about press conferences again, he said he's been if not one of the very best players this season for Brighton. So
Brendan Rodgers was talking about that in his press conference as well, about Dale Stevens.
What did he say?
He said that he's a
very good player. I mean, he when we beat Arsenal first season in the Premier League, you know, that they zeroed in on him. You know, his ridiculous yellow card he got against Arsenal, where you know, he tackled the ball and eventually, was it Ramsey, eventually turned up. I love this player. He can be maddening, but I know for what I think the argument is that you do notice when he's not in the team.
Yeah,
that's the point.
Yeah, so when you don't notice what it is they do, in our lofty position up in the West End, up, you can get to see it. And sometimes I'm not always following the play. You can see what they've got their positions, they've got their stuff, their places they've got to be in a given sort of situation. And you can see that Dale Stevens knows what he's doing. Now, we were assuming that it's going to be, because last season when Dunk wasn't playing, it was Stevens who was the captain. Absolutely. So we're going to assume that's the case, and I think it's fully deserved.
Well, he, when he signed, he was meant to be this box to box player that was going to weigh in with a lot of goals from midfield. In fact, I remember him scoring against us at Charlton directly from a corner.
I think he was originally given the goal. I think, but there was a glancing header and it was given to someone else.
We would like to see more goals from him. Well, has a guess how many goals he scored for us?
15. Oh, spot on. Was it?
Yeah.
It was a guess. Most of them in the northwest or against teams from the northwest, if I remember rightly.
Well, that's where he's from anyway,
yeah,
isn't it?
So yeah, okay. Like, we are just running out of time. So congratulations to Dale for the 200.
It's good going.
And long may it continue. Just a quick word on the man on my t-shirt, Ezekiel Scalotti. You've been having a word with him this week. He's absolutely delighted to be back in the team, isn't he?
Yeah, he was. After the Norwich game, we had a good sort of 10-minute chat. And because I hadn't spoken to him since after the Arsenal game, because when he got knocked out by Kolasinac. So, let's see what part he plays. I mean, he thought he should have been back in earlier. He might get on. I mean, Montoya's been starting regularly but not finishing regularly, so perhaps we'll see him off the bench. But just great. I thought he played his last game for Brighton, obviously, when it just shows, you know, if you hang on in there, you never know. He's got contracts, I think, for another season after this. Change of manager, it's one of those, wasn't it, where the change of manager gives a new.
Absolutely.
I don't know if a clean slate, because I'm sure a manager comes in knowing a lot about the players he's inheriting anyway. I'm sure Graham Potter knew a lot about the players on the first day of training already, but it is another way of playing and another opportunity. So,
I mean, obviously he wouldn't have had Scalotto on the first day of training because he was still coming back from the injury. But I mean, you know, we've got his mate Escuerdo, who's also coming back from injury at the moment.
Yeah,
that's taking his time. How long is it before he's back?
I think it's going to be a while. I mean, Scalotto said it's only going to be a few months, so it's like I think it's going to be a while, but we never really hear too much about it, but hopefully, because we know what a sort of magician he can be on his day as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, that is all we've got time for this week. So obviously we do hope to see Jose back in the bright shirt, because under Potter I think it'd be wonderful. I think it'll be
it's probably another a topic we haven't got time for at the moment, but wingers in the Graham Potter team? I don't know.
No,
that's not sure.
On my list, actually, but, that is all we've got time for this week. So thanks everyone for listening. Thank you to Brian Owen. Thank you to Alan Wares. Thank you to Jamie Thorpe from First Four Men for Leicester City. This has been the Albion Roar. Assuming that he's been on the plane, he's been on one hell of a journey since his debut for the Albion.